Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Really impressed by, you know, from Indianapolis, their ability to get the ball outside, you know, with lead blockers to go. And those are things that we have to work hard at. Those are things, you know, that we don't see a lot of from our offense. So we'll have to work hard at that this week. You know, sometimes we'll just go offense against defense. And, you know, it's a good scheme and one that we'll take some extra work for sure.
That's head coach Dan Quinn talking about what Frank Reich, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, is doing with his offense post Andrew Luck, which is to become – or at least to attempt to become, I guess, the number one rush team in the NFL here in terms of really building a rushing. Very good player coming out of South Florida, Marlon Mack, who's really come on. Marlon Mack has really come onto the scene here. We don't talk enough about, we talk about the great running backs, and has been right there with some of the best in the league. He's been really good. And Marlon Mack's put up big numbers. He's tough to get down to the ground. He's an underrated back when you start. Everybody, let's talk about Saquon, let's talk about Gurley. You know what? Marlon Mack is not far from that discussion, if he's not already in the discussion, in my opinion.
Haven't really seen too much of Marlon Mack play there, John Freaky, but I'm going to have to take your word for it with that one. You talk about this Indianapolis Colts team as a whole, and you look at the dynamic, I think, that the quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, brings to the table. He's a guy that you know, when you're talking about quarterbacks and the two quarterbacks that you've seen over the past couple of weeks, he changes that dynamic a little bit. You talk about how aggressive that this Atlanta Falcons defense has been. They've been real aggressive and real productive for the most part against stationary quarterbacks. Now you bring in a guy like Jacoby Brissett. He's a guy that could potentially, you know, throw a monkey wrench into things. He can extend plays and things of that nature. So it's going to be tough. You know, you talk about a good running back like the one you're describing, mm-hmm. and the fact that you have a quarterback that can sit back there and run the ball a little bit, that changes the dynamic a little bit. You can't be a free rusher like you once were the last two games that you were in.
And make no mistake, Jacoby Brissett could throw the ball. I mean, he is an accurate passer. You know, I know that everybody – I mean, he may not be Andrew Luck, because Andrew Luck may have been the best vertical thrower in the NFL, of every quarterback in the NFL. And so it's a little unfair. I mean, if Jacoby Brissett were not, you know, he's behind Tom Brady and then he's behind Andrew Luck. I mean, that's just kind of, you know, a bad timing award. If he had his own team, I think you'd have probably a different perception of Jacoby Brissett as being a quarterback. Obviously, the Indianapolis Colts, Hugh, they gave him a 2-year extension and paid him a lot of money for a reason. They think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, and I agree. I think he is. Now, he may not be Andrew Luck or Tom Brady, but that doesn't mean he can't beat you, as you just said, with his legs and with his arm.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think what they did, they did a great job. They gave him some money. They let him know that you are going to be the guy. Like, we're not going to be playing these games. We're not going to do this quarterback carousel thing, anything of that nature. You know, they gave him the money and let him know that he's going to be the guy. So he has at least 16 games for an audition to make sure that he gets to keep the job, because, as you know just as well as I do, there's going to be some young quarterbacks coming up next year that – The Colts might want to try to put their hands on. It all depends. It all depends on how well they do this year, and it all depends on how well Jacoby Brissett does at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, we're talking about their running game, because that's one of the things you have to contain. And it's, we talked about it yesterday, the old cliche, you know, stop the run, you know, run the ball, stop the run, win the game. And you got to stop the run first. But it's absolutely true with the Indianapolis Colts. You got to stop Marlon Mack. You got to keep Jacoby Brissett from getting outside contain. And Jerome Henderson, Falcons assistant, said exactly that.
They're going to want to pound it. They're going to want to control the clock. They're going to want to keep our offense off the field. They're going to want it to be a close game, and so it sets up that we've got to be ready to go stop the run and to be physical with them and you know, and deal with those backs, and they're all good players.
Yeah, one of the good things about, you know, it's been such a mixed bag of things for the Atlanta Falcons, Hugh, in the first couple of weeks as we talk about the Falcons and Colts coming up on Sunday. Along the defense, I think, has been, you know, opportunistic, and they have certainly been really good at times, you know, in the interior of the run, the interior part of the run, where they got burned by Minnesota was, you know, on the edge with a lack of edge contain. But those guys in the middle have been pretty stout. Tyler Davidson, Deidre Sinnott, certainly Grady has been I think, all-pro level the first couple of games. So if they could continue that, but remember, Hugh, they're going up against one of the better, one of the top two or three offensive lines in the NFL.
Yeah, they did really well against the offensive line they played against last week. That was probably in that same ilk. Mm-hmm. Beat them up. Beat them up to the point where, you know, the Eagles couldn't even practice. They didn't have enough bodies out there so that they could practice. But I think this is a little different animal. I think this is a little bit more closer to the guy that you saw last week. Well, the first week of the season in Dalvin Cook. You know, you talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and their running attack. They don't have a big bruising back like a Dalvin Cook that they had back there. They had a bunch of smaller guys. And the Falcons were able to take advantage of this. It's going to be interesting to see how they do with Mac back there now. You know, Mac is averaging about at least 20 yards a carry during the last two couple of games. So he's probably going to be a guy that you're looking at that film of that first game, John, and you're probably going to try to attack the Falcons defense the same way that the Minnesota Vikings attacked that defense. You know, with that big, powerful back, trying to run it between the tackles, trying to get some of that edge rush in there, get some of that edge work in there, and make sure you want to see how stout these defensive linemen are against that rushing attack.
Yeah, so Indianapolis is second in the league in rushing so far this season, partly by necessity and partly because that's what they do. Quentin Nelson, their left tackle, arguably the best offensive lineman in the NFL at the moment. They run behind him. I mean, they just are a team that wants to pound it, as Jerome Henderson said, against the Falcons, who have not established their run game yet. We have not seen the best of Devontae Freeman. I think, frankly, the best running back of the team so far this year has been Ito Smith. I mean, in the first two games.
With the small sample size that you have, John, that's fair to say. It's so much so that people are starting to wonder whether or not something's wrong with Devontae Freeman. I mean, honestly, I don't think that's the case. I think that the sampling size is too small. But when you look at the difference between the way that he runs the ball and the way that Ito Smith runs the ball, there's a huge difference. Ito looks like he's more a more decisive runner, like he's going to take the rock and, you know, put it up in the hole a little bit more. It looks to me a little bit like Devontae Freeman might be tiptoeing just a tad.
Yeah, so the Falcons, Indianapolis is second in the league in rushing. The Falcons are in the bottom five. They got to get this running game going, because one of the reasons that Matt Ryan's under so much pressure is because these other teams are able to, like Philadelphia, they just bring the house because they don't have to necessarily respect the running game at the moment. That was one of the big points that Dukes and Bell were talking about with Austin Hooper yesterday on their show. They asked Austin about, what do you make of the running game at the moment, talking about your from your position as a tight end and blocking in the running game, of it not being where everyone wants it to be.
I don't think it should be time for anyone to say the sky is falling or anything like that. But, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know, like, I mean, I had that one play. I've had a play, you know, other people have had a play where, you know, 10 people block it at perfection, then one person doesn't have, you know, great play, it loses leverage, et cetera. It happened to me in the game. Having other guys on the team. So, I mean, I would say, you know, us whole schematically is just bad. You know, it's just this, you know, the old story of just, you know, everyone taking turns messing up on one play. I mean, it's tough, but we got to be better. I got to be better. We all can raise it to another level, because you saw it was either boom or bust runs. It was either runs over 7 yards or they were TFL. So that means something, you know, none of our plays are designed for someone to run scot-free up the field to hit Devontae as soon as the ball touches his hand. So, I mean,
right.
It's just one of those things we just got to, you know, tighten up on. I mean, versus certain looks and blitzes, just, you know, it's just we're just playing together, too. I mean, we got a bunch of new offensive linemen coming in there playing next to each other, tight ends playing next to those offensive linemen, receivers working in all in unison. So it's just, you know, it's one cohesive unit that just is going to benefit from, you know, repetition after repetition. But, I mean, I'm definitely confident in Dirk and the system he has in place. We just got to be better up front.
4 years now, Hoop, in the NFL. So let me ask you this. A lot of people, not just here in Atlanta, but a lot of guys are saying, because coaches are so wary of, you know, guys getting beat up and, you know, getting hurt, guys just don't have the continuity from the reps and the play in the preseason. We all hate preseason football. Is there any truth to that? I mean, do you guys need those reps in live fire in, like, week three of preseason?
I'm trying to, first of all, let me think if I can get in trouble for answering this question.
Just be real.
No, I'm just playing. But, I mean, obviously it depends who you are, right? I mean, like, if you're Julio, guys played catch with Matt Ryan for a decade, like, you got no reason to be in preseason. Like, it don't matter for you. But, I mean, me being a younger player, like, I enjoy being out there. I mean, for sure, I don't want to be out there 70 snaps for four games, like, you don't need to put all those tread on those tires before, you know, season gets going. So, I mean, I trust Malarkey. I mean, he had a great plan for me in preseason. I mean, and we're all forgetting the fact, like, we're still in training camp during this time. Like, we get a bunch of reps against each other all the time. I just think, you know, preseason is a great opportunity to see, you know, the youth come in. I mean, preseason was incredibly beneficial for me my first 2 years, you know, while I was still trying to get a feel for the general, you know, concepts within the offense and really just going against different people and understanding how, you know, techniques are supposed to be played in different defenses regardless of the personnel. So it's hard for me to answer it because it's like yes and no, you know what I mean? I mean, there are definitely benefits to it, but it's a double-edged sword too because I've seen guys go down in a game that, you know, doesn't matter like a regular season game does, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's definitely a double-edged sword. I mean, I don't have the answer for you guys. I wish I did. That's a good question, but it's also a tough question. I don't got it for you.
Yeah, it's Austin Hooper. Yeah, it's a good and tough question here. And Austin Hooper, we've seen him grow as a player, Hugh, now into his fourth season. And, you know, how key he is in that tight end position is being asked to do a lot because the offensive line, especially over on that right-hand side when they go over there, has been so much in flux right now since the beginning of the year. And so, you know, that's the thing about tight ends. You got to be able to do both, catch and block. And, you know, you get some guys who are blockers, some guys who are catchers, but Austin has to be good at both.
Yeah, I mean, one is going to supersede the other, though. I think that most tight ends, they're not good blockers. They just get in the way. I think the best blocking tight end that I've ever faced was Mark Bruner. Used to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was one of the better blocking tight ends. The other ones that you play against, they usually just get in your way. That was the biggest thing. But Austin Hooper, he has the size and he has the ability. He's a pretty decent blocker from what I've seen of him. He's a pretty decent blocker. But he's right. The thing, you know, in order to run the ball better, you have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. That's the one thing that the Falcons have not done up until this point is control the line of scrimmage consistently. Now, there's been times where they've done a pretty good job of that, but they haven't done it consistently.
No, they haven't done it consistently. And they're going to be even more pressure because of, you know, Lindstrom being out for half the season and McGarry, and we're not really sure. McGarry didn't practice yesterday. Matt Bosher didn't practice yesterday. So, you know, those are guys that are still kind of like game time decisions for the Atlanta Falcons. Now, we certainly hope McGarry can go, and that would solve a little bit of problems, but we'll see. You know, that's the thing right now is we don't know. We haven't settled the right side of the offensive line, and that's, you know, for all the work we did, it's just partly it's not the fault of the offensive line because in the case of Lindstrom and McGarry, they just got injured.
Guys got hurt. You know, guys were pressing the duty that probably weren't ready, but you got to do what you got to do. I mean, this is the NFL. You got to do what you got to do, and you got to get ready to go. So you got to get ready to go.
The Falcons get ready for the Indianapolis Colts. Again, our coverage begins at 9 a.m. on Sunday with the Wade Ford Show. That's Hugh and Andy. They are going to be doing the Wade Ford countdown to kick off the pregame with Harry Douglas and Paul Crane. Going to be at 11 a.m. and, of course, the kickoff at 1 o'clock on Sunday with Wes and Dave. From Indianapolis. Hey, do you think you can make chili? Are you the best chili? I got to tell you, my Maven's chili is pretty darn good. Taco chili. We're having a big chili cook-off. It's going to be October the 5th from 11 to 5 at the Home Depot backyard. It's open to the public. It's a great day filled with activities for the entire family. It's a tailgate. It's our fourth annual tailgate fest, and it features a big chili cook-off. If you think you have chili game, you got to get to 929 The Game right now and 929thegame.com right now and sign up. I want to see if you've got chili game.
And none of that venison chili.
Tailgate fest.
I want some chili with some real beef in it. Not no venison. That's just my 2 cents.
Why an NFL player said the NFL is a damn joke. Who said that and what's it about? We'll tell you next after a CBS Sports Minute.
In some ways, you know, I signed up for this. No one, you know, when you draft a young quarterback, this can happen. And, you know, I gotta, you know, live with it and make the best of it.
Eli Manning talking about the fact that he has been benched in favor of the youngster from Duke. Daniel Jones going to get a start for the New York Giants. Welcome back to the Morning Show. National Football League headed toward Week 3 tonight. The Titans and Jaguars, and that game can be heard right here on Sports Radio 90. Time the game starting at 8 tonight. Titans and Jaguars, and Jalen Ramsey still on the Jaguars and whatnot in an AFC South battle between the Titans and the Jags, two teams that we will see later in the season. As a matter of fact, we'll see the Titans in a couple of weeks. Well, and actually, I take that back. We'll see the Titans next week.
Yeah, after this one. Right? Two AFC teams back-to-back, yeah, matchup, yeah.
Yeah, and Titans will have that little added extra rest coming into that game, just kind of occurs to me. The NFL and quarterbacks is such a story, Hugh, because we went through the list yesterday of all the quarterbacks that are injured or have retired or have suffered some sort of illness or not playing well, ineffective. As a result, we have a whole spate of new quarterbacks being thrust into the limelight here. And the NFL is very conscious, as we all know, of creating all these rules to protect their quarterbacks so they don't get injured, so this doesn't happen, and yet it still did. In the Browns game on Monday night, the Jets' Jamal Adams hit Baker Mayfield and drew a fine, a $21,000 fine.
Woo!
And Jamal Adams, you might recall if you're a SEC fan, LSU, great, one of the top five picks in the draft a couple of years ago, great strong safety. So Jamal sends this out on Twitter. This league is a damn joke. I just got fined $21,000 for this hit. Now, all right, the hit was – it was a strong hit. Baker released the ball. He took about a half a step. Okay. He said – Jamal went on to say, I signed up to play football, not two-hand touch. Bull crap. I don't give a damn about these soft rules protecting quarterbacks. I'm going to play my brand of football every time I step on the field shaking my head. Yeah, I mean, call the league a damn joke. So he got fined. He may get fined again. But Jamal's speaking his mind.
You're going to learn today. You're going to learn today not to speak out against the league like that. You know, I would assume that Myles Garrett probably got fined a little bit too. I haven't heard anything about it. He should have got fined because he was out there waylaying quarterbacks a couple times. I mean, that's the game that we play now. And if the ball is gone, you have to pull up. Because this is a quarterback-driven league, and Baker Mayfield is one of the chosen ones. No question about that. So if you're going to hit him, if you're going to hit him late, then yes, you are going to get fined. $21,000, that boy, they didn't bump that thing up significantly. I tell you what, though, as much chirping and crying as you're doing, bet you won't go out and hit another quarterback like that. You can talk all that trash you want. But you're going to – talking about playing your brand of football? No, you're going to play the brand of football that the NFL wants you to play.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where we're going with this because I got to defend these guys to some degree. There were a couple of times, Hugh, where guys were flagged for hitting quarterbacks, you know, for roughing the passer, where they would literally make contact with the quarterback, still have the ball in their hand, what I would refer to as a sack.
Yeah, it was a couple of times. I've seen that refs didn't get it right. But you got to go into it knowing. The game has changed to the point where – you know what he's crying about? They cried about that a few years ago, and they let it go. And the game has still been prosperous. He just has to adapt or die. I mean, that's the nature of the beast now. And there's still ways that you could be aggressive and play your game and play within the realm and the lines of the NFL.
So you
better suck it up, Buttercup, for real.
And we're talking about the NFL and the ongoing story about all these quarterbacks that are going to be, you know, sitting on the bench. You know, now, of course, Eli's sitting on the bench because he got benched in favor of Daniel Jones. Drew Brees had surgery on his hand. He's out for, they say, 6 weeks. We'll see. The Saints go into Seattle, and everybody said, well, it's Teddy Bridgewater. Well, it turns out it may not be.
Damn.
It may not just be Teddy Bridgewater, because now Sean Payton is saying he's going to use a two-quarterback system. He's going to use Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill has been a guy who's been out there in wildcat situations. I can't see a situation where Taysom is out there and you don't know it's like a run play or some like wildcat formation. I don't know. Listen, I apologize, Saints fans, if I haven't seen too much of this. Has Taysom Hill even thrown the ball over like 30 yards since he's been at quarterback at any point? I've seen the wildcat stuff. I've seen that. But has he been a significant thrower? Or is he this is a better way to put it. Is he a legit passer? Is he a legit threat throwing the football? Because if I'm a defender and I'm playing him and I see him on the field, I'm not thinking legit threat to throw. I'm not. Unless they're going to change something or if we're going to get a heavy dose of Taysom Hill actually going back there throwing the football. I wouldn't be a guy that felt like, oh, my gosh, Taysom's in the game. Watch that quick slant or watch that tight end up the seam. That's not my thought process. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do in trying to do the workaround here for the New Orleans Saints. But there are at least a half a dozen starting quarterbacks from the beginning of the year, at least from camp, that aren't playing right now. Of course, Andrew Luck is retired. or at least I shouldn't say that because I don't know whether he filed his papers. That's a technical issue. But as we take a look at the quarterbacks in the NFL, Breeze is injured. Ben Roethlisberger out for the year. Sam Darnold's been sick. Nick Foles is injured in Jacksonville. Eli Manning's been benched. And so all these backups, and teams are starting to scramble. You mentioned it yesterday. Paxton Lynch, Hugh, got his name called. And we're hearing Tim Tebow could have his name called. And then the agent for Colin Kaepernick is going out. And I don't know if Jay-Z is working on his behalf with Roger Goodell or not, but the agent for Colin Kaepernick is calling teams saying, hey, you got to give my guy a shot. Forget about whether or not Colin Kaepernick plays in the NFL. Do you see anybody bringing him in to even give him a crack at it?
I think that you would be smart to. I mean, could he be any worse than Paxton Lynch? Could he? I mean, hell, Paxton Lynch was the first round draft pick, was at the house chilling. Could he be any worse? I mean, I think you should. I mean, Colin's been working out. You know, he's had videos out there of him been working out. He can't be any worse than any of those other quarterbacks that you've taken off the trash heap and gave them a job. You're giving them $2 million a year. I don't know if it's beneficial for Colin Kaepernick to play in the NFL now. I mean, you know, when you look at what he's been to, you know, to the cause that he's championing this morning. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. The cause that he's been a part of. I don't think it is beneficial for him to go out there and play football in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not sure any team. I mean, he did sue the league in this whole thing and blah, 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 but I'm not sure any team's going to bring him in. I just don't see that. I may be wrong, Hugh, but I don't see it happening. And it's not that he isn't potentially yet, but what is he? It's been 3 years since he played.
It's been other quarterbacks that set out a year, probably not as long as he has. I know there were rumors that Brett Favre was getting calls.
Yes, there were.
Years after he was retired. I know he's not in the same caliber as a Brett Favre.
Right.
But I would say that for him to be out of the league for 3 years and him to be in the shape that he's in, it wouldn't be a stretch.
I wonder what quarterback was out of the league the longest. Maybe Mike Vick out of the league the longest between.
He was in jail.
Well, yeah, I know, but he was out for 3 years, right? And so, I mean, that's 3 years of not playing, and he was okay.
Yeah. I like I said, I don't know.
Not that how, look, Kaepernick is not Mike Vick. You know,
I don't know how beneficial. Well, it all depends.
Yeah.
You look at his body of work.
Yeah.
I mean, his body of work. Like, Michael Vick is an iconic figure here in Atlanta because of what he was.
Getting into my Michael Vick
figure. Yeah, but Colin, if you look at body of work and what he's been able to accomplish, he's done more in the league than Michael Vick has. You know, I mean, if you're talking about football, strictly football, football, he's done more. So it's one of those things.
I don't know about that.
What you mean? Did Michael Vick go to the Super Bowl? Did Michael Vick go to the Super Bowl?
All right, so he went to a Super Bowl.
Okay, so that's significant. Is that significant? Yeah. Is going to the Super Bowl significant?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, there it is then. Yeah. It's not significant. Going to the Super Bowl is not significant, eh? He went, but that is more.
I mean,
that's not
at
more?
His peak, would you rather have Vick or Kaepernick? I would rather have Vick.
I think Vick is an exciting player. I'm not taking anything away from his flash and dash. But if I'm trying to win football games, Colin Kaepernick has won some playoff games.
Well, so did Mike Vick.
How many?
Well, he won a couple of big ones. One in Minnesota where he...
Oh, yeah, you're right. He went to Green Bay and won one.
Yeah, my bad.
I digress.
But you won an NFC championship. Yeah.
Okay, and they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, so you reminded us of that one.
No, I'm just saying. No, but no, I would say I don't think it's beneficial to Colin Kaepernick's cause. That's the point that I was trying to make. We went off on a tangent and all this other stuff. Yeah, I don't think it's beneficial
to
his cause.
Even though I do find it kind of interesting that you haven't seen him. He's not in front of any cameras anywhere.
Colin Kaepernick hasn't said anything about anything.
I know.
Since all of this has gone down.
When was the last time we saw him on camera? It's been a couple of 3 years.
When you saw him do his Nike commercial.
No, but I mean, like, camera. Yeah, okay, maybe that one, but I'm not really counting commercials. I was just thinking about, like, you know, doing a news conference or being out there, even in public where you would see pictures of him. He's been kind of, like, in hiding somewhere. But he's doing a good job of staying out of the limelight, that's for sure. We're talking about the NFL as we continue here. I just wanted you to touch on this. The Eagles were so beat up, because you mentioned it in the last segment. Eagles were so beat up, they could not – Hugh, they couldn't hold practice yesterday on Competition Wednesday. They just had to do a walkthrough. Man, the Falcons put some hurt on them.
That's unheard of. I mean, but I get it because they're like a mass unit. They're like a mass unit as far as the way that they got banged up. Quarterback banged up. All the receivers are banged up. They got an offensive lineman that's banged up. So they couldn't hold practice. Yeah, so much so that I saw some of my friends that are up there in Philadelphia. They were talking bad about them, talking about how they couldn't hold practice. But listen, man, your team get beat up the way that they got beat up. You got to make sure that you got enough folks that's going to be ready to play Sunday. Season still is upon us. And just because you got beat up like that don't mean that the season's going to stop. You got to suck it up, Buttercup. You got to do what you got to do to get everybody ready to go.
Did you pick this song, Abe? It was just loaded. It was okay. It's an Oren Romain, technical director choice. I just thought it was a little soft coming up. We're talking about the Eagles getting beat up, and talking about getting beat up. Atlanta United beat up FC Cincinnati yesterday. They needed to. Joseph was spectacular when he needed to be. Jason Longshore on his thoughts about one of our questions on our Twitter today about whether Atlanta United or the Braves more likely to win a championship. We'll get Jason's thoughts as we continue with John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 99 The Game and 99thegame.com.
Pitti, ahead to Joseph, top of the arc, dribbles in, shot, score! Champagne soccer for Atlanta United on the counter to take the 1-0 lead in the 59th minute.
Mike Conte on 99 The Game last night with Jason Longshore from Cincinnati, Ohio. Sometimes Hugh Douglas, welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh. Sometimes you just know that on the field, on the pitch, on the court, that one guy is just the best player out there. And last night, Joseph Martinez proved again, he's just the best player on the field. Why is the reigning MVP? Atlanta United knocks off FC Cincinnati 2-0 behind two goals from Joseph. Both of them were highlight-worthy goals, and one of them probably goal of the week. And I don't know, maybe I'll ask Jason Longshore. Jason, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. It was the second goal of the week in MLS.
It better be. Well, we haven't finished the week yet, so I mean, let me hold off on that. But it's just a special goal. I could put it up there as maybe the best goal in Atlanta United history because you're not going to see a player be able to do what Joseph did on that second goal very often. You know, you think back to the great goals in Atlanta United history. So many of them are long-range bombs or a breakaway with speed. This is Joseph showing skill at an absolute world-class level with a backheel to himself, beating two defenders, putting one on the ground, and then a great finish. That's special.
Jason Longshore, Atlanta United color analyst, joining us after the big win last night.
So, Jason, is this safe to say, I know it was against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati is one of the newer teams in MLS, that is this safe to say that Atlanta United is back to its form and its winning ways?
Yeah, the big difference between this one and the Columbus game was Frank DeBoer, after the match with the Crew, talked about being patient. And Atlanta was in this match. The first half, Cincinnati sat back deeper, and Atlanta didn't get caught chasing too much. They didn't get pulled out of shape. They didn't get too risky. They took what the game gave them in the first 45, knowing that they were wearing Cincinnati down. They get a goal on a break off of a Cincinnati corner kick. It starts with Brad Kazan with the punch, and then Emerson Hyndman, and it's one that gets lost in the shuffle because of the breakaway with Joseph. But Hyndman, with a not just blind clearance, he plays it into space, and Joseph takes it on the break and then plays the 1-2 with Pitti and scores. When you get that first goal, it opens the game up, and a team like Cincinnati that's sitting back to defend, they have to come out and play a little bit. That creates gaps. That's when Atlanta's at their best.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're talking to Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. So, Jason, last night, Brad Guzan had one of the greatest saves that we've ever seen in MLS. Do we tend to forget how good this guy is? Because, you know, it's like having him back there in goal is just kind of like, you know what, hey, it's Brad Guzan. It's what he does.
He's such a safety blanket for this team, and he doesn't make those highlight reel saves very much because he doesn't have as many shots to deal with as a lot of goalkeepers in this league. And, yeah, I think he absolutely gets taken for granted. He's got 14 clean sheets this season. The all-time record in MLS for a season is 16. U.S. soccer legend Tony Meola set that back in 2000. He's two away from it. I mean, this is a guy who, for whatever reason, doesn't get talked about enough when it comes to the U.S. national team. he finally made his return in the last international break. And in my mind, he should be the number one for the national team, and he should be the goalkeeper of the year in MLS. I just don't think he gets enough credit.
I don't either, but you know what? Let's go out there and you know, kind of ride him and ride your stars as we did last night to a win and see what we can't do in the playoffs here. We're talking with Jason Longshore. He's brought to you by Heineken 0.0, great taste and zero alcohol, as Atlanta United now has the quick turnaround to Saturday and San Jose. But back to last night, you know, the bunkering that Cincinnati did, not surprising considering the difference of talent level and how Atlanta United was able to control possession during the game and whatnot. But it was good to see LGP back. We did not see Barco back. Do you have any idea when he might be back?
No, the Barco injury is it's a little troubling just because of the uncertainty. You know, it hasn't been described as anything incredibly serious. It doesn't sound like it's something that's going to lose him for the rest of the season, but they're very, very cautious with him. And it reminds me a little bit of early 2018, his first year with the club, where he pulled his quad at the very end of training camp and missed a good bit of time. This injury, they're describing it as something that he'll be available in the postseason. They don't want to risk it. But the more you don't see him, the more you worry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because, you know, when he has been effective at times this year, he has been really kind of the number two guy on the team, offensively anyway.
This team has looked its best offensively with Ezequiel Barco in it. And when he's not there, you have to get some different kinds of contributions from Emerson Hyneman, from Eric Grimetti, from Darlington Nagbe, who are not the attacking talents that Ezequiel Barco is. They have to get outside of their comfort zone a little bit. And we saw against Columbus them kind of stretching to try to create what Barco does and getting pulled out of position. It's an issue. This team is deep enough to deal with it, but you'd love to have Barco back for this team to get back to its full capabilities.
Sports Radio 929 again. We're talking to Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. So, Jason, Joseph is two goals behind Carlos Vela. Do you think that he could catch him and win the Golden Boot? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's possible. It's not probable because you also have to deal with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's in that mix. He's even with Joseph. And it's just the schedule is going to be difficult because you get a game like San Jose coming up that could be wide open and there could be a lot of goals in it on transition, especially. San Jose is kind of the equivalent of that team that wants to play a full court press and you get that wild high scoring basketball game out of it. You could see that on Saturday at the Benz. But then you go to NYC. That game's going to be tight at Yankee Stadium with two of the top teams in the East. You're going to be facing Montreal and New England at the end, two teams that are going to want to keep it tight and be very defensive. So I don't know how many goals are going to be available to Joseph after the San Jose game because the games are going to get more defensive.
Jason Longshore, as we get ready for San Jose, that'll be an afternoon game, 3:30 kick, Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday. Jason, we were saying we don't want to say never, but at this point it looks like the number one seed is not going to happen here. So because you're 6 points back with four games to go, that's a tall order. Even if you beat NYCFC, that seems like a tall order. So, but
it's
just
difficult.
Yeah,
but it's definitely not completely gone because you play NYC. NYC's only got one home game left against Atlanta. Philadelphia only has one home game left out of their final four. So both of those teams have a more difficult road than Atlanta does.
Yeah, well, yeah, but being that, I mean, it isn't really about whether, I guess my point is not whether you finish, you know, with the number one, number two seed, whatever you finish. It's about just being on your game. And
yeah, exactly.
Right.
No, you're dead on, John. It's you gotta find both. You want to put pressure on NYC. You want to put pressure on Philadelphia. You want to make them earn it. But more importantly, you want to be at your best hitting that postseason. And that's where being conservative with Ezequiel Barco's recovery is part of that. And finding different combinations that give you some different looks. I thought Tito Villalba for 30 minutes last night. It was great to see him get some extended time playing next to Joseph because that's a very different look than Pippi Martinez and Joseph. They can both be very effective, but there's going to be situations that call for the more direct play with Tito and Joseph as opposed to Pitti, who's going to drop in and look to create.
Jason, we always appreciate your jumping in the program. Thanks much, bud.
You're the man.
Thanks so much, guys.
Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst, brought to you by Heineken 0.0. And again, Atlanta United, San Jose, Mercedes-Benz Stadium could be a wide-open affair. It could be a high-scoring affair. It could be a fun game, according to Jason Longshore. Saturday, pregame coverage at 3, and then the kick at 3:30 at MBS on Saturday afternoon. Braves have hit a little bit of a lull here as they try to clinch the NL East. First three-game losing skid in 2 months. Brian Snicker talking about what the Braves are fighting through right now. Headlines next.
Yeah, it's one of them little stretches. You know, we just got to weather it and come out fighting tomorrow. And you know, it's not doesn't get any easier tomorrow either with the guy we're going to face.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.